a very early good morning. Very impressed with the turnout here. Sorry, I apologize for such an early start. My name is Stephen Balcom. I'm the CEO of the Family Online Safety Institute, and this is the best practice forum on child protection online, sponsored by the European Commission and the Department of Communications, IT, and the Arts in Australia. And I have a great pleasure to introduce Peter Zangle, Deputy Director General of Information Society and Media of the European Commission. Mr. Zangle.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for having made it early this morning. In addition, as the weather is nice, there might have been a temptation between where you spend your night and here to forget about your intention to come to this best practice. So thank you for sticking to your commitment.
Okay, thank you.
Allow me equally.
Good morning, everyone. And thank you for choosing.
I think that was the interpreter.
This is a moment to welcome the interpreters and to thank them for their work, because without their contribution, we normally have difficulties in communicating.
Oh, wait a minute. They're shouting. What's up? Does anybody hear what she's saying? Oh, it wasn't the interpreter. Okay.
Okay, good.
Everything, we apologize.
So we were possibly listening from another room.
Okay.
Okay.
Start again.
It's okay. The welcome I think everyone got. Okay. Thank to the Australian colleagues, with which cooperation is going splendidly and helps us to deliver on this very important field. And I equally want to welcome you on behalf of Commissioner Reding. It was a firm intention to be here at the forum, and even more a firm intention to be here where I'm sitting now at this very moment. She had to stay in Strasbourg for an important decision which was taken yesterday, and so she had to change her plans. As you know, child protection is a very important topic for the European Commission, and I very much hope that we can share some of our experience with you today, that we can reflect upon challenges and solutions that arise in the online environment. The forum has shown up to now that this is a very relevant issue. It goes like a structuring horizontal themes through this forum, and I'm very happy about that, because this kind of subject where normally there is a tendency to say, look, one or two specialists and committed people will work on it and then it's done. I hope you can still hear me. And this is crucial to us that the commitment is perceived as a very high level political commitment. As you know, today more and more children and young people around the world are using the online technologies, and this is a great success of internet, and this is the reason why we are sitting here together and meeting together those days, and they use it equally for leisure and schoolwork. They give all members of the society very big opportunities, but as everyone knows, when you have big opportunities, from time to time they are quite significant risks, and we are here to look into some of them as far as children and young people are concerned. If you can't hear me, I'll try to put the mic like that. The risks are on documentation of sexual abuse of children, where material child pornography are of relevance and is being circulated online. There are also risks associated with children's own use of these tools, which is possibly even more dangerous, where you have contact with potential abusers, well known under the reference of grooming, access to harmful content, and high expenditure on services, bullying, etc. The list of risks and threats is quite long and quite impressive. So protection of children in the online environment has been a focus for us for a succession of what we call safer internet programs, which we are running inside the European Commission since 1999. And those who are familiar with Belgian internal politics will certainly make a link between 1999 and what happened in Belgium with children just before 1999. And so it's possibly a chance we had that we have been motivated by something happening just in front of our own windows. The Commission, the European Commission Safer Internet Plus program, which is the only pan-European initiative relating to child protection online, and it deals with a wide range of challenges concerning child safety online, including the above-mentioned challenges. I mostly want to draw your attention to two operational networks which are working in the framework of this program. First, we have a set of national hotlines, which are known under the acronym INHOPE, where members of public can report illegal content they have been confronted with or which they have heard of. And then we have a second network, which is the INSAFE network, which is concentrating on awareness-raising national nodes, and they aim to raise awareness of parents, teachers, and children themselves, of course, on possibilities, risks concerning the use of internet, other electronic communication technologies, and to inform about best way to deal with these risks. Both networks have ties with action in other countries around the world and have strong visibility in the relevant forums, and I hope this morning is part of this relevant visibility. We from the European Commission, we equally support industry involvement, and I'm sure you will hear more about it later. Let me just mention that in February this year, a European framework was signed by leading mobile operators with the intention to make mobile phone use safer for children and young people. And those who have children and young people at home know what it all means. This was a result of a process of cooperation between industry, NGOs, and regulators. We very much hope that in this multi-stakeholder international environment that this approach can serve to inspire others, other industry stakeholders, to get involved in creating a safer online environment for children. I'm sure in the upcoming more than 1 hour, you will have a lot of possibilities to address challenges and possible solutions in form of international and national policies, strategies to make the online environment a safer place for children. You will focus on issues such as awareness, industry self-regulation, research, technological tools, public, private, and cross-border cooperation, both from a European and Australian perspective. I thank you all for your commitment and for the work you are doing at the benefit of a good use and safe use of internet in particular for children and younger people. I will now move there, but I will stay as long as I can, which is very close to the end of your session. And if there are questions, of course, I'm happy to answer later on. Thank you, Steph.
Thank you very much. I very much appreciate it. Okay, so we were pleasantly surprised right at the very beginning of this conference by the message from the UN Secretary General and his particular strong emphasis, and as he put it, the strong focus on child protection that was to be had here at this conference. And we've seen it through various discussions and various debates, particularly yesterday. There were a number of sessions, particularly focused on child sexual exploitation, child sex abuse images, the more of the illegal activity that is happening both in the developed and the developing world. I mean, it's a terrible issue that goes across the world. What we're going to focus on this morning, though, is a little different. We're going to be talking about content that is, in the most part, legal, not entirely, but in many cases is legal but potentially harmful for kids. So by that I mean things like adult pornography, violent images, chat, cyberbullying, I mean a whole range of content, contact, and behavior that is problematic and could lead to illegal activity as well. So we're going to start this morning and we're going to change the order a little bit, and also I want you to, even though it is still early, I want you to be thinking of questions because we're going to move to you fairly quickly today. We're not going to wait until the end. We're going to be interspersing this. This is an open discussion, so we want to bring you in as soon as you can. We have microphones that will be roving around. Pia's got the microphone. But first, we're going to hear from Colin Oliver. Colin is the general manager of the International Communication, Broadcasting, and Content Department of Communications, IT, and the Arts Australia. And Colin, talk to us about the journey that Australia has been on this issue, because I was aware back in the mid-90s of the ABA, the Australian Broadcasting Authority, and its early work, then some dramatic developments around 2000. Tell us how you got to where you are now.
Yes, thank you, Steve, and good morning, everyone. I think I need to make a couple of introductory comments first, if I may. First, to say how much we appreciate the opportunity of working with the European Commission. We both put forward proposals for best practice sessions that turned out to be much alike, so I'm very pleased to be working together. Second comment that I should just make about myself, as Steve has said, I manage the international branch in the department, but I also happen to be a member of the advisory group that deals with this meeting, the Internet Governance Forum, so I'm very interested in the links between how the child protection issue fits into the Internet Governance Forum agenda. And the third introductory comment that I need to make has to do with the fact that there is an election in Australia in 10 days' time. And this imposes some rules on government officials like myself in terms of commenting on government policy. So this could be an interesting challenge for me in answering some of the questions that come along, but I can certainly try to do my best with factual information. So we're certainly very interested in the issue. As Steve has said, it's been a growing issue over the last 7 or 8 years. I'm not sure that you can point to one particular incident, but I would say that perhaps since that time and before, it's been, much as Peter Zengel said, very much in the newspapers and indeed in the political arena. And so the issue has really gained a lot of prominence, as indeed do other risks on the internet, and these are all of concern. So we're very interested in opening a dialogue with other interested countries to explore the options in dealing with online child protection issues. The internet's a global medium. We're very well aware that we cannot solve problems on our own in isolation from others, and very interested in the question of international cooperation. With the expanding of social networking sites, the grooming of children by sex predators is a growing danger, and another risk that is concerned has to do with the possibility of children encountering pornographic sites. As Steve says, not necessarily illegal, but the question of harm is still there. We work already with a number of international organisations such as InHope and ChildNet, international organisations that are, and other organisations that are represented here. And so this morning I just want to give you a brief outline of the multifaceted approach that we've adopted in Australia. Three main areas that I will outline. The first being what we call co-regulation. I'm not sure how widely used the term is. Co-regulation in Australia means industry developing self-regulatory measures, but within a broad government framework. Secondly, some specific government actions. And thirdly, measures to assist parents to understand the issues and provide access to tools such as filtering. So let me first just say a few words about co-regulation. The government introduced the Online Content Co-Regulatory Scheme in 2000 to address community concerns about illegal and highly offensive internet content. The internet industry was consulted through the process of developing the scheme, and the scheme itself has three main components. The first concerns the ISPs, the industry's own code of practice and complaints mechanism. Secondly, our federal, state and territory governments have implemented laws within the criminal code which apply to producers of content and persons who upload or access offending content. And the third component concerns some non-legislative measures such as community education. The complaints mechanism that we have is administered by the regulator, the Australian Communications and Media Authority. It's well known in Australia that people can complain to the regulator if about issues like this across a range of media, not only in relation to the internet. I won't go into detail on the classification regime in Australia, but enough to say that some material is classified as being refused classification, as well as having other ranges of classifications for content. And some of these are identified as areas of particular concern. So when the refused classification, X18 plus, R18 plus are the names, when material is classified as prohibited and it's hosted in Australia, then the regulator is able to direct the internet content host to remove it and with a takedown notice. And there can be a fine of $27,500 a day if they don't comply. Obviously, there's another problem with content hosted outside Australia, and there ACMA is obliged to notify the content to filter vendors so that they can add it to their list of filter sites to be blocked. Australian hosted material is deemed, where it's deemed to be sufficiently serious, such as child pornography, child abuse images, ACMA refers the content to a law enforcement agency. And for the content hosted outside Australia, ACMA will, that's the regulator, will refer the details to the Australian Federal Police or to the relevant member of the International Hotline Providers in Europe Association, INHOPE. So that's part of the scheme. There are some recent government actions that I should mention. There's some new legislation to protect children online. The Content Services Act amendment of this year, which may come into effect early next year, will extend the controls that currently apply to stored content to ephemeral content, that is to say content that is just passing, maybe part of live streamed audiovisual services and the like. This was a gap in our legislative framework. And we're aiming all the time to move towards more platform neutral frameworks so that as we understand the technologies converging, so also the rules relating to content are made to apply across the board. And this is actually quite a difficult challenge and one that we're working at quite seriously. So for example, 3G mobile phones, subscription internet portals will be brought within the range of those controls. Within the criminal framework, of course, there are a number of offences to access, transmit, make available child pornography and child abuse material, as well as the possession or the production of that material to place it on the internet. Offences with penalties of around 10 years imprisonment. The Australian Federal Police have an online child sex exploitation scheme that's active in this area. So then let me just move to the third area, parental awareness, support and filtering. In Australia there is a program, Net Alert, or Protecting Australian Families Online, which was launched in August 2007, so that's quite recent. The initiative is designed to address the dangers of children accessing pornography and to combat online child sexual exploitation. It included the establishment of a national filter scheme. The scheme makes free internet filtering technology available to every Australian family, and parents can download a PC-based filter for installation on their home computer, or they can request it to be posted to their homes free of charge. It is a scheme that operates only in Australia. As an experiment, I tried to download it here, and despite my credentials as a government official and despite the fact that I was using a government-owned laptop, it recognised that I was not in Australia and I was not able to download it. Of course, that's part of a regime by which filter vendors are indeed, and these are commercially available products, are paid by the government to make these filters available to families in Australia. There's a public awareness campaign that has been implemented to promote awareness about the education, about the dangers and about the opportunities for using filtered software. The NetAlert Internet Safety Advice website and a dedicated family support helpline are in operation. So in terms of lessons learned, as I say, under our caretaker rules prior to an election, I'm somewhat restricted in what I can say about the merits of particular policies, but I can say that I think there are some very important issues here about the appropriate balance between regulation, industry self-regulation, and empowering consumers. The options that are available to take action in relation to content that's outside a country's borders, and how do we continue to adjust to this ever-changing environment, which seems to present new challenges every year. We certainly don't have all the answers, but we're very interested in an ongoing discussion and being engaged with that, and so very pleased that we're able to come together here. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you very much. Colin, I have just a quick question. With filtering, and I know this quite well through the work of our own organization, it was one thing dealing with relatively static websites, what we now call Web 1.0. But how is your regime dealing with what most people call Web 2.0 now, the user-generated stuff, the MySpace, the social networking sites? How on earth can this regime keep up with these changes?
Yes, I have to say that we're still working on the problem. It's work in progress in Australia. There's a working group that's been created to deal with the issue. As I mentioned, I think we've already tried to adjust the legislative regime so that at least we're not prevented from acting under the law where we might need to. But in terms of the practicalities of dealing with those challenges, I think we're as much interested in learning as everybody else. Thank you.
All right, and you may not be able to answer this question due to the situation you're in, but there was a UK best practice session, I think here, a couple of days ago, or yesterday. It's all a bit of a blur. But I asked the question, and I'll ask this of you, is this regime and is what you're creating exportable to other countries, do you think? In other words, is this something that you think should be done? Well, that's a rather loaded term. Could it be done in other countries?
I think the answer is yes, and for myself, I'm very interested in the question, which I suppose I'm answering with a question, but a question in my mind is: to what extent are we, the people in this room, dealing with a developed country issue in a developed country way, and to what extent? I mean, I'm thinking of Australia, for example, in the context of very small Pacific islands around who are also quite concerned about this issue. We're still to deal with that question, but it seems to me that there is a real issue here about, you know, to what extent are the lessons we are learning, to what extent are they transferable to other and particularly developing countries as they face up to it, as they have more broadband access, as more advanced mobile technologies become available. And I think that certainly deserves attention going forward.
Great, thanks. We'll come back to you. So we're going to change the order a little bit, and I said the other night that everything begins and ends with research. So we're going to begin the next bit with hearing from Geeta Stalt, from a member of the UK Kids Online Research Network at the IT University of Copenhagen. Geeta, what's the research telling us?
Well, it's telling us quite a lot, and actually we do have a lot of evidence on these issues we're discussing today. But first let me say I think that researchers would always conclude that more research is needed. That's part of the things we are concluding. But partly, of course, the more evidence we get, the more insights we get, the more questions actually turn up, and the more gaps we identify in what we know. And partly, of course, also because we are studying, as our project leader, Sonja Livingstone, says, we are studying a moving target, especially when we are studying digital media. I myself am studying mobile media and media and mobility, and it's quite a mobile area of research, so really have to move fast and to continuously repeat the research we are doing in order to be able to track both or identify both the empirical data but also the meaning of what we are studying. Having said that, I just want to say also that As you may know, in parts of Europe, we have one of the highest penetrations of digital media on a global scale. In other parts of Europe, it's less integrated, but still growing very much. And following this integration, research environments have actually for many years been studying the access to, the integration of, and the meaning of digital media also among children and young people. On a national scale as well as in an international context. And I just want to mention a few of the multinational European projects that we've been working on since the mid-90s, because it's actually the basis for the project that we're doing today, the UKids Online, and many other projects that are going on. One of the projects is started in the mid-90s and was called the Children in the Changing Media Environment. And that was a project carried out by 12 European countries doing exactly the same quantitative and qualitative studies, studying and discussing children and young people's digital media cultures in the perspective of changing environments, and that point that was quite eye-opening, because digital media at that point were just emerging and starting to become integrated in media and young people's cultures. Another project or other projects have been the Media Pro, which is a survey also easy funded, the Eurobarometer, which is also a survey made throughout of Europe. And then, importantly, also the SAFT project, Safety Awareness, Facts and Tools, which is an awareness project initiated in Norway and also funded by the EC, and which also tracks evidence about young people's uses of digital media with a specific note on awareness. The EU Kids Online project is it's not an actual research project. We're not conducting new research within that frame. It's a network, as it says here in the report, and you can find reports and flyers about the project over there. It says EU Kids Online is a thematic network designed to bridge research and policy context by examining European research, national and multinational, and cultural, contextual, and risk issues in children's safe use of the internet and online technologies, which means that obviously, perhaps not obviously, but it is a network that maps all the research done on children, young people, and online media in a European context within 21 European countries. But in order to do that, we actually want to map and discuss online media use in a broader context. In order to be able to discuss the risk issues, we also need to discuss access, opportunities, and so forth. So that's the objectives of the project. And we're actually gathering all these projects putting all this data into a database which is searchable and which is publicly available. And that is the hardcore basis of the comparative studies we're doing within this project. And we are, one of the things we're doing is to compare data. And the first report is about availability throughout Europe. Some of the other issues we're studying is methodological issues. How can we actually study these issues in a European context across countries that are so diverse in cultural, social, and other aspects? And how can we compare data based on projects and research done in different countries in different contexts? So what we actually, we're also trying to identify the research context. That means the political, cultural, research, strategical backgrounds for the research that's been done, because that, of course, impacts also the whole scope of the findings we actually have. But if I should say a little bit about the topics that has been researched, in a broader context, we have been studying a broad number of things. One thing is, of course, mapping access and use, which is quite diverse throughout Europe. In the Nordic countries, we have a very, very high penetration of all kinds of digital media. Children and young people have access to their own laptops and mobile phones and internet and in their bedroom and so on, while in other areas in southern and eastern Europe, there may be a less access to these media, but perhaps a better access at school then. We are studying online activities. What do children and young people actually do while being online? We're studying media literacy issues. What are actually the competences that children have in order to use these media and communication tools? We're studying identity issues, participation. How do you actually yourself participate in online environments? How do you create stuff? What do you do with the things you meet online? We are also discussing gender issues, parental mediation, and so forth. So there's a large number of both the context related, but also contextual related issues that we are studying based on all these different projects that we have. And I think at the moment we have about 300 research projects in the database. Based on this, we're also then studying which risks and risk areas that we encounter in these projects. And one area is, as we have heard previously here, content risks, which altogether 34 studies in the whole database deal with, which it's also exposure to harmful content, encountering sexual, violent, or racist material, is misinformation, it's user-generated content, which means other kinds of content-related issues. And it's what's called challenging content, for instance, suicide, anorexia, drugs, etc., which may not as such be risks, but it may be risky in the context of the individual young person meeting this information. Another area is then contact risks, which may be contact with strangers, cyberbullying, and so forth. It's also commercial risks, which means advertising, commercial exploitation, illegal downloading, gambling, and so on, because we know that the internet is also a very big commercial area, and children and young people are somewhat easily targets because they really want to have some of the stuff that they can get there, for instance, also in the social communities that they are in. It's very easy to use your mobile phone to pay for virtual furniture or music or whatever, but also other stuff. So that's a huge commercial risk as well. And then, of course, there's the privacy risk area, which is about giving out personal information, invasion of privacy, etc. So these are the overall areas that we're actually identifying and discussing in the context of all these projects that we are having. But at this point where we have reached almost midway through the 3 years of the project, which ends in 2009, we are starting also to identify the gaps in research throughout Europe and some of the areas that the emerging issues, you could call it, that are coming out of our studies here. And some of the gaps are that in some countries we do not have very much evidence because of the history of the integration of digital media. It's in some countries we don't have very many research projects because children do not perhaps have the long history with digital media, and because the research traditions are not very much into this area. We also have some gaps regarding children's own attitudes towards digital media, their own insights, even if many of these projects are actually qualitative and are based on the experience of children. We do not know enough throughout Europe about children's own attitudes toward what is risk and how do they deal with it, what are their own takes on what could be done about this. We know a lot about the parental attitudes and suggestions. So I think, well, as I said, we haven't finished the work yet, but it is starting to Well, to grow now, the first reports are out now. One of them is over here on the availability. We are continuing to map all the new projects that are going on, and we're also still getting in new projects. We are comparing data based on some of the projects we have in the database, and we're also trying to write up some of the recommendations at the political level or for policies within this area, which is one of the overall aims of this project. One of the things I'd say is that we have been doing this at a European level now, and we have, of course, we have, as I said, based on all these other projects we have had, a solid basis of knowledge and evidence, even if we still want to know more. But what we really would like to be able to is also to compare some of these data on a more international basis. Europe is, of course, it's a very diverse area. There are a lot of cultural diversity which impacts the findings that we have, and also the suggestions we can make for policy making and so on. But in a larger international scale, it would be really very interesting to be able to compare some of these things in order also to discuss risk issues on a more global scale.
Okay, well, thanks very much. Just a quick question. You mentioned the desire to work with other international groups and bodies. What about the work done by the Oxford Internet Institute or the research going on at, University of Southern California, the Pew Charitable Trust? There's a lot of different people out there.
You could say that the researchers in EU Kids Online are almost all affiliated to other projects. I myself have been participating in a large, global scale project on digital media, young people and learning, which was funded by the MacArthur Foundation, and I think six volumes are coming out as a result of that, based on international researchers' knowledge within this area and a lot of other areas. So we are not, I mean, that's the individual researchers' own research projects that actually feed into the common knowledge in the EU Kids Online project then. So it is based on a solid international knowledge.
Okay. Colin, I have a quick question for you. Is there a research body or is there any sort of basis upon which the Australian regime was built in terms of research?
Not enough.
More research is needed.
Yes, that's right. We end where we began. There's evaluation going on now,
right.
And we'll be waiting the result. I mean, for example, the filtering regime has been in place a very short time, and there's evaluation going on now, and not only about the regime itself, but about the attitudes and the usage and the family patterns and so forth.
That's sort of post the regime. I'm just curious to know if there was much research done before the regime was put into place.
I don't think I can answer specifically on that. Don't know.
Could I add just a little bit? There is actually very interesting research going on in Australia, but I don't know about the more political aspects of it. But that's one of the areas that we would really like to cooperate with, because
there's absolutely
substantial knowledge and things going on about digital media cultures as well, which is very interesting.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you both. I'm going to introduce Janice Richardson now from, she's the coordinator of the InSafe Awareness Network, European SchoolNet. Before I ask you to say a few remarks, could you introduce this video that you brought with you today?
Yes.
Well, just tell us a little bit about the video. Give us some background first.
Well, I would rather finish with that.
Oh, you want to finish with that?
Yes.
All right. Well, let's do that. Janice, the floor is yours. Tell us about... Tell us about awareness raising in Europe.
Yes, good morning everyone. As you have just heard, InSafe is the awareness raising network across Europe, but also Australia, because NetAlert is a member of the InSafe network. What can I tell you? First of all, I'd say there are three things that indicate to me that child protection is rather a misnomer. And what we're talking about here is information literacy. The three factors that lead me to think that the only way we can really get children to protect themselves online is, first of all, this converging and emerging technology. Things have moved so fast and will certainly move much faster in the future. And so we can talk about mobile phones today, but what will it be tomorrow? And this leads me to think that if we're going to stay one step ahead, then we have to think about information literacy, social literacy. Jacques Delors said that there are four pillars of education, and I think these really apply to what we're doing. We have to teach the young people how to go out into that virtual space and be able to know, to be, to do, and to live together. And for me, that indicates that the essential, the crucial point that we're talking about is teaching them to live together online. Secondly, I would say that we've heard a lot about child abuse over the past days, but peer abuse seems to me is something that's much more in the news with young people. Peer abuse in terms of taking photos in the locker room and spreading them around school, teasing, bullying, morphing photos, and on the other hand, children giving out their private details, self-disclosure. They don't get the communication cues from the person on the other end of the internet, and therefore they will take off their clothes, they will do all sorts of things because they don't have this fundamental social and cultural literacy which limits them in their action. Thirdly, we can do what we like for children and teach them what we wish, but they're going to pick up this new technology and carry it off into new realms and show us how to use it in very different ways. And I think this is what underlines all of the work that we do with INSAFE. INSAFE was set up by the European Commission in 2004. It has at present 25 awareness nodes spread across Europe and in Norway and Iceland, but we have three associate nodes in Australia, the United States of America, and Argentina. And it's a multi-sectorial network. About 30% of the members of the network come from the education sector. Others come from media authorities. Others come from ISPs, from NGOs. And this very broad, this very multi-sectorial mix is what gives us our force and lets us go out there and really look at the issues and try and promote effective, safe, and ethical use of internet. We have several target groups, but if you can imagine a fruit in the center, we have our core, and this is children and young people. We try to work with them as much as possible. But next, we have these carers, the people, parents, teachers, youth club leaders, who need to know how to act in this world and what sort of knowledge they need to bring to young people to keep them online. Finally, we also try to do a lot of work lobbying with the media, trying to make sure that our message is heard. And when we say we do a lot of work, let me describe a little how INSAFE works. We are the coordinators. We are the catalysts and facilitators. It's the nodes that get out there and do the work. And if you have this little brochure, you'll see who these nodes are who are doing the work. So our job is to bring them together, to build knowledge with other countries also across the world so we understand how we can raise the greatest level of awareness, how we can share best practice and develop synergy so that what we're doing is meaningful. And of course, there are different levels of integration of technology, so it's most important that, for example, Ireland shows Greece what's happening right now with youngsters in Ireland, because Greece is very rapidly leapfrogging. There aren't that many people on internet, but there are going to be an enormous amount on internet through the mobile phone. So this exchange across Europe is one of the great features of Europe, and we try to reap the added value of Europe. And that may sound funny coming from an Australian.
So it is exportable. It turns out it is exportable.
It is exportable.
There you
yes.
are. You're living proof of that.
As this is a best practice session, I would like to speak a little bit about our best practice, which is why I asked you if we could save that for the end. I think that we have a number of examples of best practice created by the nodes, shared across Europe. And if you go to our website, saferinternet.org, the first thing you're going to see is a virtual library where we have all sorts of resources, handbooks, video clips, results of surveys, all sorts of things that you can pick up and use in your own country. We're great believers in Creative Commons so that you can reproduce this information also in contact with the person who's actually built it. Secondly, we have a newsletter which we try to keep up to date with leading edge technology so that we can keep people formed on the hard side and the soft side, the technology side, but also the knowledge side. Thirdly, we have Safer Internet Day. I think you've all heard about Safer Internet Day. Last year, 45 countries took part, and if I can believe all of the requests I've had this year, there'll be more than 50 in February every year, 12th of February next year. And there we have many things, competitions for children, but we also have a blogathon, which Commissioner Reding launches on the day at midnight. It's taken up in New Zealand, where all of the people working in internet safety actually put down their ideas. This is an enormous exchange platform that lasts for one day. We move across the world from east to west, finish up in the United States after passing through Asia, Europe, and America. And I think that the importance here is that we do need a common platform. We just provide this common platform for one day for people to say what they think and for the following week for people to add their comments. So now I will finish up with one of these examples of best practice that you can take and use. Just come to us and let us know where you're going to use it, which language you wish to translate it into. So perhaps now you would like to show us where is class, please.
Schmidt, Peters, Jansen, Hermans. Is your son home?
Yes, he's up in his room. Come in.
Hi, is Klausy here?
Yeah, upstairs.
Well, then, we'll go up and try out some kinky stuff.
Yeah, okay.
Cool location.
Where's Klaus?
There.
Good afternoon.
Oh, hello.
Is this little Anna? You've got a nice bunny. Come on, I'll show you a real bunny.
In real life, you would protect your children. So why not protect them on the internet? Clicksafe.de.
No, that's enough. Well, thank you. Thank you for that. I've shown that video myself a few times, and some folks don't realize that there's a little bit of tongue-in-cheekness to that. One person took it very seriously and said, well, was that girl okay? After she had seen it, so we have to make sure we keep things culturally keep alive to that. Are there any before we go further? Any questions that you have, particularly a clarification? Anything you didn't quite understand? You want to just get a quick question on before? Yes, there's a microphone here.
I wanted to ask the question to the person of Australia, and also to you of SchoolNet. What inspiration? Justice milieu professionals take from your initiatives, and do you work with them? There are, of course, movements and work in the professionals of justice, judges for children, for example, young people, but also some NGOs, associations for the rights of children. So what is the link with the justice, professionals and also with the NGOs who milit for the children's rights.
Yes, well, I perhaps should expand on the question about social networking, because I mentioned a working group, and really I can answer the question by saying that kind of work includes our Justice Department, so our department, the Communications Department, the Australian Federal Police, some other specialised agency, one called CrimTrack, private industry, including MySpace, Microsoft, the National Association for the Prevention of Child Abuse and Neglect, and there's another organisation called Braveheart. So we do try to reach out to organisations that have a high level of interest, but also a high level of professional knowledge. Yes. So.
Okay. Did you want to respond?
Yes, we do also have quite a few links with justice. First of all, there are many lawyers in our nodes, and this is the advantage of being multi-sectorial, and NGOs, of course. But secondly, there are some of the nodes, for example, there is Cyprus, there is Poland, and I can't think of other examples right now, who actually train the police. And I think that this is very, very important. As far as lobbying is concerned, we have reached that point now. We have matured in the 3 years, and we came together in Cyprus 3 months ago and decided where we want to go now. We think the first place to start lobbying is to get internet safety or information literacy in its broadest sense on the curriculum. So we do intend to begin lobbying, but we would like a much closer link with the justice departments. We do work with the ombudsman in several countries, but we need to do this across Europe. This is one of our ambitions, and we count on people like you to help us.
Good question. Good
just a brief comment, even if the question wasn't for me. I just wanted to add that the research areas do also cooperate very much with NGOs and at the political level, for instance, by participating in the media councils and so on. And we also cooperate, for instance, with industry in development projects in order to develop more qualitative, for instance, content and so forth. So okay. It's interesting.
Points of clarifications. Go ahead.
Question for Colin first. Colin, on the work you've done in Australia.
Sorry, just say who you are.
Stephen from ChildNet. Yeah. Colin, what evaluation are you building into the process of making software available to customers or to parents in Australia? Just an important question. And the other point to pick up on Janice's point, absolutely right. If we're going to be effective in this area of education, we need to go upstream and ensure that it is integrated into the formal curriculum, not just in schools, but in initial teacher training. There's some important work that's been done in the UK, but I couldn't emphasize that point more. We have to obviously work with children, young people, and parents, but longer term, we're only going to see a change in this whole culture of online safety if we're integrating the technology and the net literacy at the point of induction to teacher training.
Okay. There was one more.
John Carr from the UK's Children's Charities Coalition on Internet Safety. It's partly a question, partly a comment. A lot of the discussion about reaching out to children and young people, it seems to me, is framed in a way which implies that the children and young people are a homogenous group, that children and young people are undifferentiated. And there's a particular group that I'd like to refer to. For example, in the UK education system, at any one moment in time, perhaps 10% or slightly more of children will be classified as having learning difficulties of one kind or another. Or, and as we know, as children go through their lives, their situations and circumstances can change. So what might be, a risky behavior for a child at one point in their life may not be at another moment in their life. And so when we speak also about youth empowerment and all of the and in all of these other ways, in rather broad brush, with very broad brush strokes, I'm afraid we are missing perhaps some of the children who are likely to be the most vulnerable, the most likely to end up in difficulties of abuse or exposure to inappropriate material. And also, finally, when we speak about reaching out to parents and the importance of engaging with parents, let's not forget, in many other areas of social policy, this has been tried and it has failed. And so, again, there are certain families, and we mustn't pretend it's otherwise, where no amount of reaching out, no amount of parental education, no amount of cartoon versions of internet safety is going to make a blind bit of difference. What do we do from a public policy perspective about children in those circumstances? I assume we do not say, well, that's just tough. It's just too bad on those children because there are far too many of them.
And the question is? Oh, that was that.
What do you think about that?
Well, thank you for that point of clarification, John. Does anybody want to tackle that at this point? Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, I would say that the experts, and this is the great advantage of having experts from all different areas in our nodes, do take this point very much into consideration. And this is why it's not just a school thing, because you can't reach all youngsters through schools. It's a youth club thing. It's a Boy Scout thing. I don't know which node is right now working with the Boy Scouts. We try to reach out into all sorts of areas because we know that one way or another, there is a possibility to reach them. It's also extremely important to use the media in our countries because there are still a percentage of young people who are not on internet, who don't have access. But these youngsters are avid watchers of television. So it's important to use every single thing that we have at our fingertips, and if that doesn't work, well, then we have to think even further. I fully agree we can't use a broad brushstroke talking about young people. Every individual should be reached, and the one place all youngsters do go to school, and so if this were on the curriculum, if when they learn to read, they learnt their broader human rights, like being allowed to have a safe environment, and that when you have rights, you have responsibilities, something that I find it quite appalling is not generally learnt in school, then I'm sure we would succeed in reaching out to all of those people that John Cow has mentioned.
Okay, thank you. Is this a question of clarification?
Yes.
Okay.
Very quick. Douglas Souza with CP80 Foundation. First thing, I would like to applaud all that has been said and the efforts that governments have got together to protect this issue. And I want to post a question, and maybe a rhetorical question, and you just think about it. Have we or has any of these people ever thought about putting some of the implication on the content publishers? Because all has said and a lot has said about the people that access the content and us consumers. But it seems to me, and part of the foundation I work for, that we have very little choice as far as what kind of content reaches our home. And once it's inside our home, it's a little bit harder to fight than if we fight it before it comes into our home. So just a question for everyone to think about.
All right. Thank you very much. Let's bring in Maria Jose, otherwise we'll get to the end and you'll have to ask your own questions. So, what's so fascinating about this panel for me is to hear from government, to hear from research, to hear from the NGO sector. And we're very privileged to have Maria Jose Cantarino de Frias from Telefonica. She's the social commitment expert, which is a title I don't think I've come across in my travels. So talk to us about industry involvement. Actually, it bears relation to the last question as well. What you know, self-regulation, we hear a lot about. We heard about co-regulation from the Australians. Tell us about Telefonica and tell us a little bit more about what industry's response is here.
Well, first, I'm more responsible for minor protection than social commitment expert, but it's true that it's in my visit card.
Oh, okay.
But it's okay.
I beg your pardon.
Well, Telefonica is a Spanish worldwide company. It's settled in more than 20 companies, mainly in Europe, where we operate under the brand of O2 and Telefonica in Spain. And we are present in almost every country in Latin America. We are developing as well in Asia and Africa. We provide our customers with communication services such as fixed phone lines, mobile services, broadband, digital TV, etc. And we provide these services to more than 200 million of clients. Sorry, I had a problem with my computer. Okay, so I'm going to talk a little bit about the penetration of the internet and mobile phone in Spain, just to give you an approach. About 43.3% of Spanish families use the internet, but they only have broadband 16.8%. Regarding children, about 10 of each 10 Spanish children of age between 10 and 14 years old, they use the internet. Which is amazing on the net is the only 7.3% of the information is in Spanish. And the good news are that since 2000, this has been increasing 231.1%. The Spanish language is the fourth language more used in the net after the English, Japanese, Chinese, and Japanese, sorry. The level of penetration of mobile phones is much higher. It's 106% in Spain. And regarding children, the age between 10 and 15 years old, more than 58% of Spanish children has mobile phones. The percentage of young customers is increasing and their age is going down each day. We all know, and we have been talking all this day about this issue, that they are good tools of integration. They help people to get in touch with each other. We can do whatever we want with the mobile phones. We can communicate each other. We can download games, music. This is whatever we want. With the internet, it's an excellent tool to work, to study, to look for any kind of information. But I don't think that when the internet and the mobile phone started to share our lives, that we could imagine that we were going to work so hard to keep the user safe. The video shown by Yanis was a very good example of the things that we have to face each day. And the industry is part of this issue because we know very well how the new technology works. And we know as well the problems that the customer are facing. In Telefónica, we are aware of this issue and we have developed a strategy based in three pillars. So first of all is the self-regulation, then is education, and then is specific products for children. But this is something that we cannot do alone. So these three pillars are supported by a strong social network. So we have approached in each country where we operate the mainly NGOs, the organization. We work very, very, very close with the European Commission, with the Children Ombudsman of Madrid. Some of the NGOs that collaborate with us are all around presented here. We have Save the Children, we have Protégeles, which operates under the name of Seu Abrigo in Brazil. We have FOSI as well, Chinet. So regarding self-regulation, that is what we try to work in Telefónica. One of the first action we took, it was in the year 2002. We realized that there was a high amount of image of pornography hosted in the personal pages of Terra. So we took a very strong decision, but it was the right one. We eliminate all the images that were hosted in these personal pages. So we reduce all kind of pornography that was going sharing, and we reduce all the complaints that we have received. Since then, we have reached agreements with the NGOs, with the Children Ombudsman of Madrid, and police organizations to continue working in the same line. We have implemented as well a normative regarding adult contents. To be able to share in each country where we operate the same rules regarding the offering adult contents that we offer in some way. And recently, in February, this was mentioned by Peter, Telefónica was one of the industry that signed the European framework leveraged by the European Commission. The objective of this is to offer a safe environment for children while they are using the new technologies and to offer educational measures. Telefónica is always ready to support any action that we work in this sense. So the GSMA has launched an alliance and Telefónica is going to be part of the alliance. The objective of the alliance is to fight against or the distribution of images of children abuse on the net. We work on education as well. As I said at the beginning, we are very well placed to give information about the things that are happening and how to try to reduce this effect. We work here with the NGOs. For example, in Spain, we work with Protégeles, and we go to the schools, but Protégeles go to the school, and we have worked together in the material that we present to children to tell them about how to use properly the internet and mobile phones, what they cannot do, what is not allowed, and all the good things that they can do, because we cannot forget that these are very good tools of integration, so we cannot only just say that they are bad, we just have to say as well, which is very good. We have joined as well with all the industry, or part of the industry in Europe, with the SchoolNet, to launch a microsite with information for teachers, because there is a lack of information for all the parents and educators and teachers. So all the industry is putting together everything that we know and everything that we have done in order to create a database where teachers can reach all the information they need for their pupils. And regarding research that we have been talking about, we have promoted as well and launched a research in the school of Latin America. We have started with some countries, Chile, Argentina, Venezuela, Mexico, Peru, and Brazil, because we want to know how our children using mobile phones, internet, the digital TV, and the video games as well, how they are using it, how they are sharing their lives, which are the implications in their relationships with their friends or with their family. We are going to have the final results in the summer. This is a very large research. The schools has been very open to help us, but this is a huge amount of information we have to deal with. And we have as well launched leaflets, DVDs, specific websites with all this kind of information. And the last pillar was specific products. The children has mobile phones. Anything we can do, anything we can say, children use it. So we thought that it is not safe for them to have a normal mobile phone, because they are going to be able to use it as an adult. So they are going to be able to do any kind of calls, to send any kind of SMS, or to give the number to anybody and to get in touch by them, or to surf in the net. So we have launched two different mobiles. The first one was for children from 10 to 14 years old. It's exactly a normal phone like to looks like one of the parents. We always choose between the brand Motorola and Nokia, because are the brand chosen by children. They have a color screen. They have special contents that we have chosen. So they are always educative contents. And we offer to parents localization services, reverse charge call, and the possibility of select the numbers where we don't want to call, where we don't want that they call, or where we don't want to send SMS premium. Which thing that is amazing is the first time we launched this phone, it was in 2005. The box where the telephone is inside, it includes a brochure with the information for parents on how to use this kind of mobile phone. Which is amazing is we realized that almost any parent implemented any kind of restriction. So the following time we launched, 6 months later, the new version, we included the leaflets on the top of the box and we put it outside to know that there was a guide with the instruction for parents and that they have to read it and to settle off the restriction. This was useful because since then they are really using more the restrictions. And because the age is going down of the users of mobile phone, we have launched another one that is for children between 6 and 8 years old. This mobile phone only allows to make and receive calls and to receive SMS. You cannot send SMS, you cannot surf on the net, you cannot do anything. And the numbers that are allowed to call or where you can call with your telephone has been settled by the parents through the web page. So it's only the parents who can control the telephone and the children cannot call anybody, and it's not useful if he goes to, if he gives the number to anybody that he doesn't know, because he's not going to be able to join him. So it's a very safe mobile phone that only, the only thing that you can do with it is to speak. So it's really very, very safe for this young age. And which is amazing is that this kind of telephone has been requested by very old people, because it's so simple to use, just his toes.
My mother would love it.
Yes.
So more or less, this is the kind of things that we have been doing, a little example of good practice of what is doing the industry in Europe or in Spain, which is where I live. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Actually, you made the point about child protection being a misnomer. You just pointed out, in a sense, that, I mean, literally, my 85-year-old mother hates the internet, hates email, hates all of that stuff, because she gets penis enlargement emails. I mean, she doesn't want to see this stuff. And she certainly wouldn't want it. She wouldn't take a mobile phone either, because she thinks stuff like this will start coming off her phone. So perhaps we're talking about, I don't know, family safety, or we're talking about something more than just child protection. But it occurs to me, listening to you, I mean, you know, in some ways, the government can pass laws and it can do things. The researchers can go out and have a look. The NGOs can agitate and so on. But you guys, you're dealing with it every day. You're at the coalface. You're getting the complaints. You're getting the surprise when you look in to see what's actually being hosted on your servers. So it almost puts you in a position of kind of judge and jury. And do you feel comfortable? I mean, does Telefonica feel comfortable about that, or does it need more assistance and help from others in society?
Well, I think Telefonica and all the industry, we feel attacked, because
you feel attacked.
Well, we offer the technology. We are not guilty of the bad use that the people are doing of it. Mm. That is true. We are this hurts directly in our reputation, and we are not guilty. We just put the technology, and the bad people are who are doing the bad user. So so we have to do something, because, as I said to the beginning, we know very well how to use them, and we know what is happening, because the organization that we work with, we are telling us, this is wrong, you should have done this, this is dangerous for children. So it's obviously we cannot do alone. We need to back an organization, like the NGOs that I have mentioned, or the European Commission, the Children Ombudsman of Madrid. But they are also helping us to go in the good way.
Right. Fascinating. Any points of clarification? Any questions immediately from Maria Jose? Yes. Do we have the microphone?
Thank you. My name is Jutta Kroll. I'm coordinator of the Youth Protection Roundtable, one of the projects within the Safer Internet Program. And this project aims at bringing together technical specialists on the one hand and children's welfare experts on the other hand, because we are convinced that it's most important to have more dialogue between those both sectors. And therefore, I highly welcome this cooperation with the industry sector. But what I want to know is that framework for the mobile phone operators, do you think that it can be a model for cooperation in other sectors? Because the mobile phone sector is one hand, but ISPs and the providers of content are the other area. And might this be a model for the other sectors as well? Thank you.
Yes, I think so. I think the best way of working in this sense is to work all together, and it's easier to do the things if we share all the same ideas. I think this is a little bit the idea that the European Commission has right now. They try to involve other part of the industry in the same way to share common practice. We in Spain, we are obliged by the European framework to sign a national code of conduct. So we have sit down in a table the four main operators of mobile phones in Spain to say what we can do. And we have put all that together, we have signed it, and we are going to present it at the end of this year.
Great. Any other immediate questions for Maria Jose? If not, I want to just sort of backtrack a little bit and talk about filters and maybe be a little bit of a devil's advocate here, because we provide a free filter, by the way. It's not a commercial plug, but we do. So let's just say that filters are great, particularly for young kids. But once they get to 12 and 13, surely the game's up. What do you think, Colin? Are filters really just something that something of the past, a bit of a dinosaur here?
I think our impression in Australia is that the market is underdeveloped, and that even though there's been promotion of the free filter program, that's still the case. So I think we're still of the view that there's a lot to learn. The filters available in Australia are different. I mean, they're all commercial products. They all have their differences, and you can go to the website and see a bit of a matrix that tells you what each one does and does not do. Some are more geared to different age groups, to pick up on your particular point. I think we're still at a very early stage in our own experience.
Okay. Geeta.
Well, to be a little bit provocative, I think we are talking a little bit too much about filters. Filters can be avoided. Rather young children can actually get access to the information they want to. They've always been able to do that also before digital media. What I think the real challenge is, or one of the challenges, is to discuss the very broad variety of attitudes towards what we are dealing with here and what we're doing. For instance, the attitudes towards the level of monitoring, the level of control, the level of how we prevent children from doing things, or level of, for instance, information and so on. And I think it's too easy just to say we'll put on some filters and then the problems are solved, because it's not that easy. Mm. And I think our projects in the European context have clearly proved that there are huge differences in attitudes throughout Europe towards what parents should do, what teachers should do, what industry should do. And it may not be that easy to actually meet on all points in this. I think we may have some kind of meta frame and some issues, of course, regarding child pornography and so on. We can easily agree upon those things. But on other issues, it may be very difficult to actually find a common ground.
Okay. Janice, you made a pretty strong point about media literacy. And you even said a term I hadn't even thought of before, social literacy. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, I grew up in the 50s and the 60s in a seat beltless car. You know, we used to just sort of wander around in the back seat, and it was great fun. We loved it. But then, you know, the seatbelt campaigns came in, and we learned to put the seatbelt in. And they're still, those campaigns are still going to get adoption and so on. And it's pretty easy to get your hands around a seatbelt. It's kind of, you know what that is. What on earth is media literacy in a Web 2.0 world? Can you give us some help here?
Yes, well, I won't bore you, but I do believe that media literacy is such a very, very narrow term that I hate it. I think literacy is composed of six different types of literacy. We need to be functionally literate. We need to be digitally literate. I think they speak for themselves. And then we get media literacy, be able to read between the lines on the press, on the television, etc. But then we have this, I haven't worked out the name yet, audiovisual literacy, where we need to know how to take music and put it with images and a little bit of text and a few colours and get these messages across, so that we actually learn to manipulate all of the other elements that we can use to express ourselves instead of just expressing ourselves in words. Mm-hmm. Then I would say social literacy is knowing our rights as a human being, our responsibility, knowing how to get what you want by asking for it the right way, but also knowing in front of who you take off your clothes, for example. When I think of these young people on social networking sites actually stripping down, and I think the Netherlands have a wonderful ad where a boy is watching a young girl strip down, and suddenly the pair, through the webcam and through his computer, and suddenly the mother calls the boy and the girl down to dinner, and you realize the boy looks at his sister and sees that she has got that T-shirt, and that she has just taken off her T-shirt in front of him, and what horror, that was my own sister. And I find that an extremely powerful ad, but this for me is social literacy. Know what to do and when to do it. And then cultural literacy, I think, is most important. We talk about a borderless world, but first of all, you have to know your own culture and understand what's acceptable, but what your culture is built on before you can go out and really understand what's happening. Another word my pet hates is the word tolerance. And cultural literacy means that you are no longer tolerant, but in fact, you fully understand the situation of the other. You understand its culture, so you don't have to tolerate anymore. You understand and you can share. So for me, information literacy is all of those things, and I think that every one of us here certainly has these forms of information literacy, but I would say that we are that very lucky 4% of the population who makes it and has luck and a lot of other, and education on our side. And for young people to really survive in this very vast, borderless universe that we call internet or the virtual space, as we could say, then young people need to have all of these skills.
Mm. Mm. Gosh, and then they have to teach their parents.
And dialogue with the parents,
there you
of
go.
Course.
There you go. Did you want to respond at all to the others?
No, I just want to make a point with when you were talking about filters. We offer filters as well in the internet, and we are going to put filters as well, to offer filter system as well with the access to the internet on the mobile phones. I think filters are okay, but they are not filtered in any computer or in any mobile phone that the children are going to use. So I think that the main point is the education.
Mm-hmm.
The education. So I think the government should be more involved in education, in promote education in schools.
Very good point. And to answer my own question, I obviously believe in filters. I think filters have a place in the universe of tools that we have. My own belief is that once a child reaches 11, 12, you're moving more from filtering to monitoring. And you're also shifting the responsibility more onto the child, him or herself, to say, all right, we're going to take the filters off, but we also from time to time look to see where you've been. And therefore, if you've gone off to places which actually we don't think are appropriate, there will be consequences. So that's my own personal thing. Geeta.
I just wanted a little take on that, because again, that's an example of one of the differences, the cultural and attitudinal differences we experience. Because I think now, empirical evidence shows us that, for instance, in Denmark and Sweden, and perhaps also Norway, not very many parents would actually monitor their 12-year-old children's mobiles and internet, because it's a matter of upbringing. Online behavior is just another way of behavior. It's another way of being social and so on. So it's just another part of the general upbringing. And I don't think that many parents would actually monitor every move of their children in general when they're 12 or 13 year old. It's also a matter of trust. But again, I'm not saying that it should be like that everywhere. It's just an example of different attitudes and different cultures within a rather small area of the world, actually.
In my own particular house, that's what we do.
Yeah.
So I just want to bring this to a conclusion. It's been interesting because there have been a lot of other parallel sessions, particularly yesterday, on issues to do with free expression, free speech rights. And I almost felt as if I was in a parallel universe, because I was going from the child exploitation workshops through into the free expression ones. And I just thought, my goodness, there's two very different discussions going on here. And Carmen, I just wanted to bring you in on a suggestion or a thought that we had yesterday. I wonder if you could mention this to the group. Use the microphone.
Yeah. We've actually taken that to heart and tried to schedule a venue so that we can bring technical specialists, people concerned with issues related to freedom of expression and concern about some of the methodologies that are being used to protect children that may, in their opinion, infringe upon that. together with children's organizations so that we can have an open dialogue, and we've managed to do that. So it's now scheduled in this room at 12:30. So we really would welcome you to come. It will not be a, it will be a very much an open session to hear views and to exchange openly. Thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you. Hopefully we might even be able to move some chairs so that we're actually facing each other instead of facing a wall. Okay, so are there any other final points, any final questions anyone has to make? In which case, I just want to put in a plug. We have our own conference coming off next month, December 6th, the first annual online safety conference and exhibition in Washington, D.C., and there's information over there. We will be exploring something which we're calling the new culture of responsibility. So as much as there are issues to do with free speech rights, what are the new responsibilities for government, for industry, for nonprofits, and for the kids themselves, for the material that they're putting up on the web? Just remains for me to thank very much the European Commission, Pia Lang particularly for organizing this, for the government of Australia, and good luck in your transition, whatever that might be. And to thank the panelists for their fantastic contributions, and to thank you all for coming. So thanks very much.